The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, number 135, for January 7th, 2008. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the first Mac Geek Gab of the new year. Happy New Year, John.
Happy New Year, Dave.
Yeah, I am Dave Hamilton. Of course, that's John Braun. And we are here to talk about all things Mac and beyond, as we do each week for you. Although next week, John, is Macworld Expo, and we're probably going to talk to you folks. I think we'll have three Geek Gabs next week is kind of the plan, if we can do it. We'll do one on Monday. You know, we'll both have gotten into town, into San Francisco by then, hopefully settled in our hotels, wherever that may be. You know, John, speaking of hotels... Uh-oh. Well, we kind of screwed up. We didn't screw up at all. Our promotion with the Milano that you heard about went so well. There's not enough rooms left there for us, so I think we're staying somewhere else. But we'll be all right. So I think a couple of the staffers are staying at the Milano, and a couple were kind of bounced around. But we'll be fine. So we'll do one Monday from whatever hotel we're in, and then Tuesday we'll probably do one again. Just talking about our reactions of the keynote. And then later on in the week, Thursday or maybe Friday afternoon before we jet out, we'll kind of do a wrap up of what we saw on the show floor. We'll have the TMO Editor's Choice Awards to talk about, and all sorts of good stuff. So that's next week.
So you may want to, if we're going to talk about what happened after the keynote, we might as well mention it now. If you have any speculations as to what may happen, let us know, and we'll, see how people do.
Yeah, and maybe at the end of this show tonight, John, if we've got some time, we'll talk about our own speculations. But before we get there, we have a couple other things to cover. We have your questions and some tips. We've got some questions about migration and Skype and startup. We've also, there was a comment in the show notes last week that one of you left that I think has kind of led me down the right path for this whole iCal to-do management thing. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then if we can do it right, I think we've got a great explanation of kind of the way that Time Machine is working under the hood. So with that, I think, John, we jump right to Max, unless you've got a reason otherwise.
Nope. Let's go.
All right, Max, take it away.
Hi, Joe and Dave. Max here from the UK. I love the show, I'm a long-time listener, but I've got a bit of a problem with my Mac. I'm still on a PowerBook G4, and I'm using Tiger. I'm upgrading to Leopard. Brilliant, I'm really looking forward to it. But I don't want to use the Setup Assistant. I've got a lot of craft, I've got a lot of stuff that I just want to get rid of. I really want that new Mac smell. Can you tell me how I can upgrade to Leopard, and bring across my mail, my cha-ching, my address book, and all my Firefox bookmarks and preferences? That'd be really cool. Thanks very much, guys. Keep up the good work.
I like that background music. I'm grooving on that little cowbell thing going on. Okay, but anyway, back to the question here. Okay, so yeah, the migration assistant is not what you want to use if this is your goal. If you really want that clean and lean, fresh start, then you want to do exactly what Max describes. Just do that. Skip the migration assistant. Do the setup assistant, because the setup assistant will get you resynced with .Mac and all of that other stuff. Get your name in there. Get you registered. But you don't want to use the migration assistant. Okay. Mail. Now, we've dug into some of this stuff. So to answer Max's questions, mail is stored in your home folder. Obviously, you want a full backup before you do this. Max had sent us an email that said he backs up every day with Retrospect. So you want a full backup before you do this, obviously. Then from your backup, you're going to go to your old home folder, library folder, and then there's a folder called mail. And that's where all of your mail data and preferences are stored, including your bundles if you've got any third-party stuff added into mail. So you might want to check the bundles folder to see if there's any third-party stuff you want to keep or not. But otherwise, that folder is one you want to grab. Firefox is stored in home/library/application support. Now, home would be /users/your short username. So in my case, it'd be /users/Dave/library /application support/Firefox. And then in that folder, there's a profiles folder. You may want the whole Firefox folder. You may decide you only want profiles. You may decide you only want one of the profiles from therein. The first time you launch Firefox, it'll create that folder, and then you could migrate stuff in from your old one as you see fit. Address book, again, home, library, application support, address book. That's got everything in it right there. Once with address book, once you copy stuff in, reboot right away. That address book database is used by a lot of different things. Make sure you don't have mail, iChat, or address book running, but go ahead and reboot right away just to make sure that's, that change sticks. And I'm not sure about Cha-Ching. It's actually an app I've never heard of before. John, have you heard of it?
No.
Okay. But I think home, library, application support is a good place to look for that. And then you just look down the list and see if Cha-Ching, or perhaps if, Rosie Boy Software makes Cha-Ching, and they don't. If they do, that would be a really, really wild guess. But, I don't even think there's a company called Rosie Boy Software. But let's say Rosie Boy Software makes Cha-Ching. You go down the list, you find Rosie Boy Software, and you look, oh, there's Cha-Ching and Cha-Chong and all the other stuff that they make might be listed there. Some companies do it that way, some companies don't. So that answers Max's question. Now, John and I were talking a little bit about this ahead of time, and John, you had some thoughts about maybe some other things he might want to consider bringing over, even though he doesn't want to bring over all the cruft.
Yeah. So first off, Cha-Ching is made by Midnight Apps, which that's kind of a cool name.
That's much cooler than Rosie Boy Software.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to agree with that. So a couple of other things you may want to bring over. So I found a couple. So one, a lot of things are stored on a user level in home directory /library/preferences.
Right.
Because you're going to notice, I mean, if you just install things fresh, things that you entered in the past, there are just so many things that well-behaved applications store in preferences that you're going to notice it. So for certain apps, a license key or things like that may be stored in a preference file. You may want to bring those over on an as-needed basis. You could bring the whole thing over, but then that kind of goes against the, aversion here to bring over cruft, because there may be a lot of cruft in your preferences folder. So and then if you take the same folder but from the main volume /library/preferences, that's more system level stuff, and there may be things in there again that you may need to get at. Now, I did find an explicit one day when I was looking through home directory /library. There's a keychains folder.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Yep.
Okay. You want to bring the keychains. I just noticed that as I was looking through the folders, and that just jumped out at me. So the migration assistant definitely brings that over for you. But
I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to bring your keychain over. It's got, all your Safari saved passwords, all that stuff. I can't see a harm in bringing that over. If there's stuff in there you don't want, you can certainly go through the keychain and weed out the stuff you don't want. But my guess is your life is going to be a whole lot better if you migrate that keychain.
Keychains sync with .Mac now, so I guess you could also, count on that. But it's always, better to have more copies than less. So
I'm with you.
So those are my additional suggestions to do. Get a clean start, but it's a good thing, but I think I got to say the migration assistant for the most part does a really nice job, but I can understand the desire, especially I started on OS 10, so I got, major cruft until, I ran into a problem and started fresh. So, good thinking.
All right. So we're moving along to James, and James has a question that I didn't think there was an answer to, but John, you're going to tell me differently.
Hey, John and Dave. This is James from Pennsylvania. I'm calling with a couple questions. First of all, my dad wants to get rid of the chime or tone when he starts up his Mac. He doesn't like it. I don't know why, but he wants to get rid of it. If you could tell me, that'd be great. Thanks. Bye.
All right. So James said he had a couple of questions, but yet left only one. But it's a good one. And John, you're going to help us with this.
Yeah, so here is the we're going to give the geeky and the kind of everybody else solution here. So the kind of geeky way to solve this problem, a tip of the propeller beanie to Mac OS X hints, and basically they have a solution that someone provided that is Unix scripts, and it has to do with a file. I think it's /etc/volume settings, and Dave has more script foo than I do, and you peruse it, and basically, I guess it just saves a setting before you shut down and then restores it when you start up. Is that kind of the gist of it?
That's right, but the file /etc/volumes.settings is not a standard file on your Mac. It's actually a file that this script creates.
It pipes it out there. Okay.
Exactly. It's two scripts. One that you hang on your shutdown process, and when it shuts off the system, and what John's going to tell you is when your sound is muted, if your sound is muted before the computer shut down, it will not sound the startup chime. So what this does is the script goes and grabs your current volume setting and saves it to this /etc/volume.settings. But it could save it anywhere, just as long as it's a file that it knows to get. Then it mutes the sound. Then when you start back up, hangs another script off of the startup process, goes and fetches the sound from this /etc/startup settings. If the sound is muted, boom, it restores it to whatever it was prior. So that's that's script. That's the geeky way to go. Fun for everybody, fun for the whole family. But let's say, you know, the whole family doesn't really like Unix scripting. What then, John?
Why shouldn't they? I mean, aren't your kids into Unix scripting, Dave? Or not yet?
Not yet.
All right. So then I did a bit more surfing, and I found something. Actually, this hasn't been updated in a while, but it seems to be an accurate resource. I found Jeff's Mac support website. And actually, yeah, I see on the bottom the last updated was 2005. But the advice is valid. And so Jeff here points out three ways. So one, and I'm sure you can find this buried in the Apple documentation somewhere, but holding down the mute button on a one-off basis. I haven't tried this, but sounds like something pretty easy to try. So we'll let you know if that works out. And, you know, depending on your Mac, like on my portable, it's a F3 on some of the keyboards. It's an explicit key. So try that. The other, as Dave already pointed out, is if you turn the volume down, that you may not want to do that on a global basis. And then the third one is that there's a pref pane called startupsound.prefpane. And as you can imagine, what it does, gives you a preference pane in your system preferences, and you can specify what the startup sound volume is.
Do you know if the startup sound pref pane works with Leopard?
I only tried it on my Tiger PowerBook G4, so I do not know.
I'm looking at the info on MacUpdate.com, and it seems that it says 10.4 or later, so I'm going to guess that it's going to work. I think the general gist of things hasn't changed a whole lot in that regard. So,
and it may be doing what that script does. It's just doing it in a clever way that you know, shields it from the user.
Yeah, so that's really, truly the fun for the whole family. Mm-hmm. Right, John? Okay. Adam, we'll take that question.
Hi, guys. This is Adam in Hollis, New Hampshire. I have a question for you. I'm currently running Skype on OS 10.4, and I'm wondering if there's a way to have an audio control in Skype so that I can adjust the volume in my headset independently of the volume that's set for the max line output for speakers. So if you could let me know, I'd sure appreciate it. You may have covered this before, but I certainly don't remember. Thanks.
You bet. Okay. Yeah. In fact, John and I are using Skype right now, and I see a beautiful little volume slider right in the middle of our window, but we are using the Skype 2.7 beta, which, of course, is publicly available, and we'll pop a link in the show notes, and I'm sure Michael from iPhone Alley has put one right here in the enhanced AAC feed. So there you go. That will include it. It's just that simple. If you, for whatever reason, don't want to use the beta of Skype, you could get really geeky and grab something like Audio Hijack Pro and hijack the Skype signal, and then from there you can use that, you know, one of the effects or whatever to tweak the volume. But frankly, that's more trouble than it's worth. Not that AHP isn't great. We use it. In fact, we're using that right now too. But go get the beta of Skype, and that'll get you there. You have anything to add to that for me, John?
Nope, that covers it.
Okay, our first sponsor for this show is EMC Insignia. And EMC Insignia would like to invite everyone that's coming to Macworld Expo to visit their booth in the West Hall, booth W4520, starting January 15th, which is the day that the show starts. And you can hear the latest Retrospect news and enter to win an iPod Touch. EMC Retrospect is their award-winning backup utility. I use it every day. And I can't wait to hear what this news is. And I'm sure there's lots of us out here that perhaps have been waiting for news from Retrospect. So visiting their booth, W4520, starting January 15th. Go check it out. Find out all about what they're talking about. We'll be talking about this more next week. And you can enter to win an iPod Touch. So last week and really for the last couple of weeks, John, I've been lamenting how I really like to use iCal because of various reasons. It's the built into the OS X. There's really no other great calendar available for the Mac. But their to-do support is limiting. And one thing that I was really looking for was get me a list of the to-dos that I can see that are only due today. Either things that were due, you know, a week ago that I still haven't done and up through today. But I don't want to see all this stuff in the future. Now, if I go into iCal and I set it to sort by due date and limit to the calendar view, it's going to show me, for example, today, everything that's due up until the end of the month, if I look in month view. And I just don't need to see what's due on the 22nd of the month. Yes, I can see it in order. And yeah, I'm smart enough to understand that that's how that works. But I just don't want to see it. If I have all this stuff due today, I want to check it off. I am anal retentive about this stuff. I want to check off my to-do list and never see, you know, and see it empty at the end of the day. That's a beautiful, wonderful feeling. Not every day works out that way, but that's how it goes. So I talked last week about Bento being from FileMaker being a potential solution, but it's missing some key features in the way that you search data. And someone posted in our show notes for Mac Geek Gab number 134, and they said, iCal's to-do view stinks. Why don't you check out Mail's smart mailboxes? And sure enough, in Leopard, you can create a smart mailbox that's not full of mail, but is full of to-dos. And there's all sorts of different criteria that you can apply. And one of them is that the to-do is overdue. And that pretty much does exactly what I wanted. I can also have it show me all the to-dos that are due this week after today. And I can show it all the things that I've completed in, say, the last 2 weeks. So I've got, you know, three different smart mailboxes all related to my to-dos. And I can totally manage my to-dos right there in Mail. And with that one piece of advice, I migrated everything over from now up to date to iCal. And I did that actually by syncing to my Palm Trio and then syncing back to iCal. That was the easiest way to do the import. And I've been living in iCal essentially for a week now, 6 days, and very happy. I can sync with everything. Still not entirely pleased with to-do support. It could be better. That we talked a little bit about this, John. In Leopard, iCal now, the calendar store, the place where the calendar data is stored, is kind of separate from the app. And in fact, the calendar store supports a lot of things, including recurring to-dos. The schema supports it. Everything supports it, except iCal doesn't. So this has opened up an opportunity for a lot of third-party developers here. And I think while you were building last week's show notes, you found some apps out there, John, that might be handy for folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to try them, but we'll link to them. So the first one I found, and this reflects what you've been pointing out, that there was a fundamental change in the way this stuff was stored. So one I found was High Priority. Their tagline is Manage Your iCal To-Do Items Anywhere, Anytime. That's for Tiger, but then there's another app called Anxiety,
yep.
Lightweight To-Do Management, and that works on Leopard. And actually, the prior product explicitly says we don't work with Leopard because it's different. So we got one app for Tiger, one for Leopard, I'll check them out in detail at some point, either you or I. And
I checked out Anxiety a little bit. It's okay. It's not fantastic. I think it's great for people. It just doesn't deliver the information in a way that I want to see it. But again, that's the beauty of this new calendar store, is that there's so many opportunities available. And I think we're going to see a whole lot more kind of come out of this over the next 6 to 8 months. I hope, anyway. That's my dream. So if any of you are, budding developers and you want to hear us pimp a product week after week after week, go ahead and create this, and I won't stop talking about it. So that's the most I can do. I don't know. I mean, I'll pay you for the product too, but I don't think my $30 is going to make or break anybody's, It's like, that's not your programming budget. So, but we'll give you some free promotion because it is the thing that we want. So that's the best we can offer, John. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I'm with you.
Okay, good.
I'm Chadwick. Glad to hear
that. Yeah, we can talk about Chadwick, and I'll apologize first that I called Chadwick Chapman last week. He understands. It's hard to understand the voice comments sometimes, but this time Chadwick wrote to us, and he was talking. We were talking about restoring to-dos and iCal events from Time Machine, and the issue with the caller, Robert, said, look, you know, I tried to go to Time Machine from iCal and all it did was brought me to the Finder, so it must not work. There are, and here's what Chadwick writes. There are a few applications, namely iPhoto Mail and maybe a few others, that have direct support in Time Machine. That is, if you have one of these apps open and click on Time Machine, the app stays open as Time Machine activates. Then Time Machine gives you the ability to search back through time in that app specifically. Obviously a very nice feature, but limited to certain apps. iCal is not one of them, at least not yet. If one activates Time Machine with any other app open, then a Finder window appears to allow you to search back in time. The way Robert interpreted this was that Time Machine is not backing up iCal and his to-dos. Not true. Time Machine backs up everything. However, there isn't just the easy, fancy way of restoring iCal as there is with Mail. It takes a little more effort. In the Finder, in Time Machine or not, one can navigate to your home folder, again, /users/short username/library/calendars. Once here, you'll see a list of all your calendars with terrible to recognize names. But the cool thing is, you can navigate inside your calendar folder and turn on cover flow, and you'll actually be scrolling through all of your events and to-dos right there in cover flow. So you can quickly see which calendar is which and then decide which one you want to restore. Click on it, and it pulls it forward, and then iCal has it to access. So thank you, Chadwick, a.k.a. a.k.a. Chapman. I think that'll help. And of course that will work with any third party app, or any Apple app that's not directly supported by Time Machine. You got anything to add there before we really get geeky here, John?
Nope. And I guess where we're going to get geeky is pretty much a follow-up. So I got to say in my defense that I think the advice that I gave was,
intuitive.
Well, intuitive and somewhat correct, but the reality of what hides beneath the surface is a little more complex than I think we thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think his name is Scott. It was hard to tell again with the call, but in any event, here we go with an explanation, and we'll follow it up with a little bit of discussion here.
Hey, John. Hey, Dave. Scott here from Sydney, Australia. Really regarding the Time Machine article you published in MacGeekGab 134, just letting you know, internally, Time Machine uses hard links to both files and directories. So it looks like every one of those timestamp subdirectories has absolutely everything into it. But if a file hasn't changed, every single one of those trees points back. Even if it's like a directory tree that hasn't changed, there'll be a hard directory link in there somewhere. The practical upshot of that is it's very, very hard for you to copy anything in there. Even if Time Machine would let you, which it doesn't, there's a whole lot of code in there to stop you from doing that if Time Machine is running. If you unmount that and attach to something else, try and copy data in there, it just won't work. You're going to have to be very, very clever and subtle about it. Now, I'm hoping that there's someone out there who's poking at it and trying to get that working, because you know, other tools to help manage Time Machine would be very, very nice, but it's not just something you can pull off yourself from the command line. Great show. Have a great one.
Okay. So, John and I had actually a fantastic discussion before the show, so I'm going to hopefully we can recapture some of this here about this. So the idea is in Unix, and this is important to understand how Time Machine works, there are such things as soft links or symbolic links and hard links. A symbolic link, well, let's take a step back. Let me see if I'm doing this right, John. When you create a file on the drive, you have the file created out there, and it takes up whatever space it takes up. Let's assume for the moment that we've created a small file and it takes up one block, and it's block number 157. Okay. Then there's the table of contents, the directory. And we've talked about this before. It's the thing that you try to fix when you're working with disk repair in Disk Utility, Drive Disk Warrior, Drive Genius, etc. So you've got the directory, which is the table of contents. And so now you've got this file written out at block 157, but you need to be able to find that. So your Mac says, okay, we're going to put an entry in the directory and we're going to call this Dave's file. And it's Dave's file. And there's a little pointer there that says this file lives at block 157. That is a hard link to that file. It points to where the data actually lives on the disk. You can create multiple hard links. So you could have five different links that are, you know, Dave's file one, Dave's file two, Dave's file three, all pointing to that same thing. If you delete one of them, it only removes the directory entry. The other four stay. That's a hard link, watered down. A soft link or a symbolic link is something that points to the directory entry. So if we've got, you know, Dave's file and it's in a certain subdirectory and it points to block number 157, and we then create a symbolic link, you know, Dave's symbolic link to file, it's going to point to the directory entry for it. If we delete the original Dave's file, the symbolic link will no longer work because it doesn't know where the data was. It only knows where the directory entry was, and that's been deleted. So what Time Machine does, now that we... Did I get that right, John? You think I got that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
In my mind.
Okay. So. Mine too. So that makes two of us. We're two thumbs up, right? Four thumbs up even. We've each got two. What Time Machine does is it creates, if you look in the Time Machine backups, it creates, like Scott said, it creates multiple folders, one for each time it backs up, either hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, etc. In each of those folders, the first time you back up, it actually does copy everything over. The second time you back up, it only copies the things that have changed. But if you go into the folder for the second backup, it's going to look like everything is there. What Scott's saying is that all of those are hard links back to the same place, the same data that was saved the first backup. So the only time it's not a hard link to the original data is when the file has changed. And then obviously it's a hard link to the new data. And that's how this works. That's how you're able to kind of roll forward, even though you might lose, let's say, you know, Time Machine backs up a full week. And then after the week is over, it backs up every day for a week. After the week is over, it rolls it all into just one backup for the week. Well, it doesn't roll anything. It just deletes the old entries and takes the last backup for the week and says, boom, this is it. It doesn't have to move any files around. It doesn't have to do any magic because it's already right there. It's all these hard links pointing right where it needs to be. The problem, of course, is if you try to move this stuff around or, heaven forbid, copy it to another drive, it's going to blow up. And that's why the OS stops you from doing that. And Scott mused that perhaps somebody will have some additional, you know, utilities or whatever to manage these Time Machine data stores, because it's a whole lot more complex than I realized. So I think we got that right, John.
So it sounds like there's the potential, if you know what's what in that whole backup, to make sense of it. But
yeah,
looking at it, it appears, oh, look, it's just all my stuff is there, but it really isn't. It's there, but in different forms.
Right. And it's all fine and good until you try to move that stuff around or try to change it in any way. Reading the data from it, no problem. You read that stuff all day long. You'll get exactly what you think you're going to get. But moving it around and massaging it, man, that, like Scott said, you got to be really careful there. So
yeah, and I actually found something good. Ars Technica, which is I think a great site, and their Mac Geeks get another tip of the propeller beanie. I got a link to an article where they go into the level more detail than we did about this whole thing. But in general, I think they praise Time Machine because it is deceptively simple when you look at it, how it's doing what it's doing.
Okay. All right.
Right.
Our second sponsor for this show is Smile on My Mac, our friends at Smile on My Mac, with PDF Pen. Now, PDF Pen is an application that lets you modify, manage, create, and use PDFs in a way that Preview just can't even touch. You can take two PDFs, pull a couple of pages out of one, pull a couple of pages out of the other, arrange them the way you'd like, save it as a whole new PDF. You can also edit. If you want to fill out a form on a PDF that's not built to have forms, you can do that. You can put text and graphics anywhere you like on a PDF. You can even, if you scan your signature in, you can even put your signature on a document. You know, let's say you get an email in, they say, look, fill out this form, sign it and send it back, paste your signature in, boom, you can email them back a PDF in minutes. I do it all the time with contracts and agreements, and it works really, really well, really, really fast. Once you've got PDF Pen in your workflow, you won't be able to get rid of it. And this is PDF Pen from smileonmymac.com. It is $49.95, but as you would expect, there's a trial available, so you can go ahead and see if it's going to stick for you, and then go ahead and ante up when the time is right. So smileonmymac.com, PDF Pen. With that, John, do we have... Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do it.
I think it's time to get the rant meter going here.
All right. Listen, we got an email, and I'm not going to say the person's name. And this person wrote in, and he said, I think it's a he. Honestly, I don't even know based on the name. Says, you know how annoying those ads are on websites that try and make themselves look like little windows and cover up content on a page? Well, here's a quick fix for that. If you have a site bookmark, simply change the bookmark address from... And he uses PCWorld.com, but it could be MacObserver.com. So www.MacObserver.com/, you change it to www.MacObserver.com/#, or the number sign, which is, you know, Shift-3. It will automatically close those annoying pop-up ads for you. Try it. Okay, well, I didn't see it make any difference here. But that's not the reason I'm sharing the tip. I don't know if this tip actually works or not. But, you know, the problem is... that this is how you pay for these sites, right? If you visit a site, and I know there's people out there that don't like ads on the web, right? I'm not a huge fan of them when they're done incorrectly, and we all have our definitions of what incorrectly means. But here's the deal. Your way of paying for the content on a website is allowing the site to show you the ads of their choice. If you don't like those ads, don't block them. You're just stealing at that point. Just don't visit the site. This is, you know, this is how it works. We've talked about this before. It baffles me that there's folks out there that think that it's just okay to go ahead and, you know, effectively steal this content and that they expect it for free. It's not free. A lot of work goes into this. Trust me, I've been doing this 10 years. And there's people that visit TMO that use ad blockers, and we don't go out of our way to stop them. Enough people that visit TMO don't use ad blockers, and it works fine for us. And obviously we've got a successful business going, but it does kill me that folks think that this stuff just magically appears on the web, and, you know, we don't have to pay people to write it, and we don't have to pay for hosting. We don't have to pay for the bandwidth they use to download it. It's all, you know, it's all just fine and good. They don't need to see the ads anyway. So I'm actually in a good mood tonight, so I can't really get all fired up about this.
Well, my only follow up though is what I will have to say, because I mean, you know, hey, it, you know, is part of my bread and butter too. But the thing is, what I do not like is ones that like hijack your computer. Like,
I'm with you, man.
You know, I mean, the ones that will like take a I'm sorry, I guess they won't be a sponsor, but like weather.com or some others where you're looking at data and all of a sudden it splashes something in front of it, and the whole user, it just jars you.
Right.
Like the whole user experience just is disrupted, and now you're all of a sudden really not happy.
Yep. And that's
or the ones, the intrusive ones. I mean, I got to say the pop-up ones are typically kind of, you know, sometimes get me.
That's why
not done right.
We've never done pop-ups or pop-unders on TMO. Never, ever. And it's because I don't like them. I don't believe in them. So.
Yeah, but things on this, you know, as you know, TMO and a lot of other sites do, you know, they're placed, you know, in locations where you can take a peek at them if you want, and the data is often relevant.
We try
to what you're looking at. Gee, you know, what a concept, making the ads relevant to
that's the key.
What you're looking at or what you're reading.
Yeah,
I mean that's a. So anyway, so that's the only thing I'll say is that you know, there are people who do it right and do it wrong, and the ones that do it wrong kind of ruin it for everybody.
That's true. That's true. So, yeah, anyway, like I said, I have trouble getting fired up about it because, you know, it's been an all right day. It's not a bad day. all right. And next week's a good week, even though it's crazy flying out there to Macworld and, you know, the mayhem and the lack of sleep and yada, yada, you know, all that stuff we can complain about. But there's no complaints. It's always a fun week. And so I've got a couple of things I'm doing next week. I have now my session was moved time wise. I told you it was going to be moved. It was. It's still Wednesday the 16th, at 1:15 p.m. I still don't have a room for this yet. Well, I do have a room. They just haven't told me what it is. But there's a link that we'll put in the show notes. The session is Running Your Mac Lean, Clean, and Mean. Talk for about an hour about kind of a lot of the topic that we've covered here in the show in bits and pieces before. It's kind of all consolidated together. How to get the most out of your Mac, how to make sure you're not getting, you're not running stuff you don't want to be running, how to know what to clean off, how to do it, all that great stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. I've been putting the session together for a while. I've actually run it a couple of times. And so if you're coming out to Macworld, Running Your Mac Lean, Clean, and Mean, we'd love to see you there.
I may show up because I want to know how to make my Mac mean.
You do. That's right. Well, you got to, it involves paint and teeth. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to give any more away.
Okay.
Yeah. Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, the Cirque du Mac 5.0 party. John's seen the t-shirt designs. John, in fact, is the only person on the planet that's seen them other than me and the guy that's designing them.
Very nice.
Just finally got the designs tonight, but it's good. It's all working out just fine. They'll hopefully be there at the club in time for us to hand them out.
I would say if you see Dave, me or Dave, we may have a ticket too, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Hunt us down if you need to.
I do sometimes, yeah. Depending.
You'll have
try
tickets.
To pack the joint, right?
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. Yeah. And then Thursday evening at 6 p.m. at Jillian's, which is right there in the Metreon on the corner of 4th and Howard.
Everybody goes by that to get to the show. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, to get to the South Hall, right? This year, the show's also in the West Hall. But I'm doing the Mac Podcaster Meetup panel. Last year, this is Adam Christensen's, or he organizes it from the MacCast. Last year, they did it at the Apple Store. This year, they're doing it at Jillian's. Kind of works out a little bit better, I guess. And so that's the Mac Podcaster Meetup. And then there's a whole meet and mingle thing after that. I'm not sure how long I can stay. I've got a couple of other commitments that night, but I'll certainly be there for the panel at 6. So feel free to come on by. And that's
cool.
Macworld.
Yeah, I'll have to put a link to the event list updated.
The Hess list is up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So we'll link to that. You know, not all the events are open to everybody, but
right.
Hey, give it your best shot, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we've got a couple of minutes here, John. I'll kind of go find the band while we start talking about maybe some of the things we think
we'll
see. You
lost the band.
You know how those guys are. They're freaking musicians. They never, they're never there when you need them. Hey, there they are. All right, John. So you and I have talked about a couple of things that we think we might see next week. Announced new announcements from Apple. Mm-hmm. So this is our speculation. We don't have any inside info. At least I don't think we do. And you know, there's this whole talk about a smaller notebook coming.
Call it
the MacBook Pro 13 or maybe a Mac tablet, but it, you know, kind of a pro level notebook in some
12.
Way, shape, or form. 12, you want a 12-inch screen? That's right, of course.
PowerBook G4 12-inch Reborn. That's what I'm counting on.
All right, so if this comes, John, do you think it's going to have a touchscreen?
You know, the thing is, I mean, Apple has the technology to do that for quite a while. Yeah. I think it's, is it Inkwell or whatever? It's part of the OS. So the capability to do that sort of thing is already built in via tablets and other devices. So a touchscreen is just another way to do that. I guess my only thing, well, there is that.
They own multi-touch now, or at least they licensed it. Right?
No, what was the machine
the
that
Microsoft
they came
thing.
Out with? There was a.
The Microsoft thing, you mean?
No. The modified Mac. Modbook, was it, I guess?
The Modbook from Axiom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got that. So I don't know if Apple's going to reproduce that, but no, I'm just thinking the form factor. You know what? That's a tablet, but a touchscreen. I don't know what I'd do with it. I'd have to think about that. I don't have a strong feeling about that.
Okay.
They're speculating though that like some people have said no optical drive.
Right.
I guess RAM drives. I think they're still too expensive. But you know, at some point in the future, maybe within our lifetime, who knows? You know, the mechanical hard drive will go away. But you know, they're still beyond what RAM can do as far as, you know, speed and capacity, and the industry is just all geared up and they keep making breakthroughs. So But, you know, at some point you may get a machine that has, no drives, physical mechanical drives.
What if they do something like those hybrid drives? Now, maybe it wouldn't be a drive. Maybe it would just be, you know, some flash RAM and then a hard drive and some something in the OS that, you know, maybe puts a virtual memory on the flash RAM or, you know, caches out on the flash RAM. Right. There could be a way of really intelligently making OS X use flash RAM in addition to a hard drive to make it that much more energy efficient, that much faster, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think about that?
Well, you and I, how I go on about the whole device removal kind of deal and, coming up with an architecture that could get around that mishap there of, you know, accidentally or purposely pulling devices out of the machine when the machine doesn't want you to.
All right.
I'm thinking of service.
Go ahead.
What do you got?
Oh, no, go ahead.
All right. So I'm thinking services. I mean, you know, there's been also speculation about people keep going on about subscription services. I still don't know if it makes sense for Apple to do that sort of thing. Though I hear maybe more movie deals maybe coming. Again, that's just complementing what they have already.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to do something with the Apple TV, because my understanding is the Apple TV hasn't really met with a lot of success. I was hoping actually at one point, maybe it'll come in the future, but an Apple branded HD TV with all the stuff built in.
Yeah. I think
the prices are dropping on those where they could get do the Apple thing and make a little money still.
Yep. Yeah. No, I think an updated Apple TV, I think there's a good chance of that coming. Sure. I'll buy into that. The other thing I think we're going to see is finally, hopefully, new displays. Right. It's been years since the displays were revved. And here's the thing. You buy a Mac Mini or a Mac Pro, right? You dump as much money as you possibly can on a Mac. The one thing you can't do, iChat AV.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Can't buy an iSight anymore. And there's no display sold by
that
Apple.
That was a beautiful camera. Why did I'm glad I got one. I guess you can still get a Mini B. But that was an awesome camera for the price and the form factor.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
I mean, the built-in ones, they're tiny. There's only so much you can do with a teeny little lens versus, a full-size camera.
At least it's something, though, right? I mean, right now, like I said, you buy a Mac Mini or a Mac Pro, you don't get a camera. So I think displays with cameras have to come. I'm shocked that we haven't seen them yet. So I'm hoping that we see them next week. And
another thing I'd like to see, which I've seen on PCs, especially Dell. You know, Dell's not all bad. I use Dell stuff at the day job, but Dell displays have both my Dell display and my Dell machine. It's an Inspiron. Have slots for reading memory cards, specifically SD.
Yep.
Which I have in my palm, and I also, you know, a lot of people around me have them in their cameras. So having a memory card reader of any sort in the machine, and, you know, it's technically feasible. I'm actually curious why Apple really hasn't, they kind of left it third parties or doing it with wireless. I guess they feel that's the more elegant way, like Bluetooth or something. But, I have a FlashGo, and you probably have some sort of USB adapter. But wouldn't it be nice if it was built in?
That would be cool. The problem is, what do you build something in that reads everything? Do you pick one format? I mean, maybe that's the reason, because it's always seemed kind of kludgy to me, like, oh, you have, three, but you don't have the one that your digital camera uses. Too bad. Sorry.
Yeah, Dell settles, I think. Well, in the portables, they settle for SD.
Okay.
Which is pretty common. No, but then cameras more like I have a CF camera. Well, I have both. I use CF and SD cards, so I think those are probably the two more popular. But they keep coming out with new ones. I hate it.
Yeah. All right, and then lastly, we've got Apple's beloved device, right? The iPhone. Are we going to see a new rev to the iPhone? And I'm gonna say, I think we have to. And the reason I'll say that is AT&T has said that certainly sometime during the first half of 2008. They're going to be selling a 3G version of the iPhone. So something that, finally can do faster than Edge in areas where it's available. Mm. If Apple were just going to upgrade the RAM on the iPhone from, say, 8 to 16 or possibly even 32, I don't think, and my legal knowledge officially goes nowhere, right? But I don't think they would have to get FCC approval to just update the RAM on the thing. I may be wrong, but my guess is if there's something they could do without having to tell the FCC about it ahead of time, that would be it, updating the RAM. But if you're going to go 3G, man, you got to start all over again and do that whole approval process again. And it's a very public process, as we saw last year. So I think in order for that to happen, they've got to come out and say, we are doing this, and then they can start the process. And that way the Apple gets to release the details in their fashion, as opposed to letting, you know, people just read the FCC filings. So with that, I think we've got to see something about it next week. Now, what that's going to do to iPhone sales in the interim, man, I don't know. But I think if they're going to do it, they have to, unless there's something I'm missing in the process. And please, you know, if out there, let us know.
Well, the final one, I think, and Robert wrote in about this, but this is going to be the surprise announcement, is the iFridge.
I knew you were going to go there.
Well, I can kind of sympathize or because I had to replace mine. Oh,
you
man.
Did. That's right. Yeah. So now you just bought a fridge. Oh, that guarantees it, man. That guarantees that Apple's going to release a fridge next week.
I won't be able to get the iFridge. My house is falling apart now. No, it was 6 years old and the compressor just bam.
Wow.
Of course, you know how long the warranty is.
Five years.
That's right. So after six, the compressor goes.
I've had fridges last 10 years.
Well, who knows? Who knows what's going on? And then, the other day, fun with, you should get the band in here, but fun with owning a home is, you know what a circulator pump is.
And your oil burner for the forced
mine
hot water.
Mine sang
heat.
To me.
Oh, that's
which
not good.
You don't want your circulator pump, which moves the water to heat your house around, sing to you, because that means it's about to die. And it's important to circulate the water when you're in the Northeast or anywhere where it's cold.
Yeah. If that's how you heat your house, absolutely.
So the guy's coming tomorrow morning to pop in a new one.
Oh, good. All right. And I think with that, we're done. So the next time we talk to you will be from beautiful San Francisco, California, from whatever hotel we're in. We'll let you know then. Let's see. Cashfly Hosting is the place you downloaded this show. Podcast Marketplace includes the A5 and A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebones Software, one free download from Audible, PDF Print from Smile on My Mac, Retrospect from EMC Insignia, and Harman-eTravel.com for your last-minute Macworld Expo travel needs. And this show was brought to you by the letters 9, by the number 9 and the letter P. John, do you have anything to tell them before we go?
Don't get caught.
Made up.